From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, you're listening to the Best of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff.
We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present a previously recorded episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is historian Richard Weikart, author of Darwinian Racism: How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another Hank Unplugged podcast. We are committed to bringing the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people directly to your earbuds, and today will be no exception. I've spent the last couple of weeks immersed in the writings of Dr. Richard Weikart. I'm going to introduce him in just a moment, but as prologue to this podcast, I want to mention that anyone who spent even a modicum of time looking at the progression of scientific speculation knows full well that academics are not impervious to groupthink. And that is particularly true when it comes to tenure, social dynamics, grants, and the like. But we would be hard-pressed to come up with a better example of herd mentality than the collective embrace of eugenics. The moniker eugenics, or what's known as the science of being well-born, was coined way back in 1865 by Sir Francis Galton. If you don't know about him, he was a prestigious polymath. He was a sociologist. He was a psychologist, an anthropologist. He was also cousin to Charles Darwin. And Darwin actually followed suit. In The Descent of Man, he made explicit that his notorious subtitle, The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Life, quite rightly applied to human races. Apart from eugenics, according to Darwin, there is nothing to prevent the reckless, the otherwise inferior members of society from increasing at a quicker rate than the better class of men. Well, groupthink, and that's the point I'm trying to make right here, is groupthink followed on the heels of Galton and Darwin. And so with the dawn of the 20th century, eugenics became standard fare in high school biology textbooks. I think, off the top of my head right now, of George William Hunter's textbook. We all know about it. It was titled A Civic Biology. And I, like most other Americans, remember it because it was the infamous biology text at the center of the 1925 Scopes monkey trial. And of course, this text made a stirring case for the pseudoscience of eugenics. And all of this has been breathlessly touted by the evolutionary establishment as evolvement. In reality, it represents a throwback to 19th century scientists who hypothesized that the gene pool was being corrupted by the less fit genes of inferior people. And we want to talk about all of that today because my guest is a historian who ably notes what happened in the last century. But he also has ably made parallels to what is happening in our century. My guest today is Dr. Richard Weikart. He's an emeritus professor of history at California State University, and he's a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. He's an author. He's written many books, including From Darwin to Hitler. And one of my favorites, a book that I have to confess I'm only halfway through right now, it's titled The Death of Humanity. In addition to His many books, he has published articles in scholarly journals, including articles for our own flagship magazine, the Christian Research Journal. His most recent book is Darwinian Racism, How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism. It is great to have you on Hank Unplugged. I've listened to some of your interviews and find you to be a direct fit for our mission statement. You're interesting, you're informative, you're inspirational. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's start out with an obvious question, perhaps, and that is, looking at Darwinian Racism, your book, was Darwin a racist?
Yeah, there's actually not too much debate about this among historians who look at this issue, because Darwin clearly taught in The Descent of Man. He doesn't say much about humans, by the way, in The Origin of Species. And some people say, well, he didn't really talk about humans there. But, well, 12 years later, he published The Origin of Species in 1859. But in 1871, he published The Descent of Man, where he made very clear his views about race as well as other things. And he made very clear that he not only believed in the differences in the mental abilities and even moral capacities of different races, but perhaps even more strikingly, he believed that these races were in competition in the struggle for existence, and that because of that, some of the races that he considered superior, and of course he thought the Europeans were superior, were going to exterminate those who were considered inferior.
And so something has to be done about that, and that's why in the prologue they brought up the word eugenics, and I really want to focus on that for a few moments. Eugenics was not only something that was proliferating in Nazi Germany, but it was proliferating throughout the United States of America. I mean, you have some of the most prestigious minds, from presidents to, well, Margaret Sanger, who's the birth mother of Planned Parenthood, to Carnegie, to Rockefeller, to Stanford. You had all of these prestigious universities and people promoting eugenics. And it wasn't until the ghastly results of eugenics became apparent to all in the Nazi death camps that it quietly vanished into the night.
Yeah, exactly. Eugenics was considered scientific mainstream. There were courses on eugenics in American universities. Biology textbooks taught eugenics as really as a matter of course. And it was built upon Darwinian ideology. And Galton, you mentioned, was a cousin of Darwin, but we don't want to go into the guilt by association. But Galton himself said that he came across the idea of eugenics while reading The Origin of Species, his cousin's book. So it was very intimately connected with Darwinism. And if you look at the ideology of the eugenics proponents in the late 19th and early 20th century, they were claiming forthrightly that they were building their eugenics notions on Darwinism, because they thought that humans, by having institutions that helped the weak and the poor, had sort of contravened the Darwinian struggle for existence, and that this then was going to allow the weak and the sick to reproduce and to swamp, essentially, the good genes, so-called good genes, of the other people in society. And so they needed to find a way around that, which was eugenics. So eugenics was artificial selection. And by the way, one of the favorite tools of the eugenics movement in the early 20th century was compulsory sterilization. And Nazi Germany was not the first place to do that. Nazi Germany did do that, but the state of Indiana in the United States was the first jurisdiction to pass a compulsory sterilization law, and California passed one 2 years later, and many states in the United States passed them in the first half of the, in fact, over half the states in the U.S. had compulsory sterilization laws, which were intended to try to improve human heredity.
Yeah, it was back in 1907. Amazing that you have the state of Indiana passing the first compulsory sterilization law, and then, as you point out, a lot of other states followed suit. Your title, Darwinian Racism, How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism. I want to get into all of that, but you've pointed out in other venues that this outrage of sterilization laws and eugenics, was actually being preached in America in liberal Protestant denominations.
Yes. In fact, there's an entire book out by Christine Rosen, a scholar who's looked at that issue. It's called Preaching Eugenics. That's the title of her book. And in that book, she looks at the way that mostly Protestants were preaching, supporting eugenics, and it's overwhelmingly from the liberal Protestant side, which was sort of the mainline denominations in the early 20th century in America. So the liberal Protestants were trying to jump on the bandwagon of anything that was considered scientific at the time. So they embraced Darwinism, they embraced eugenics, they embraced scientific racism, the topic of my book, Darwinian Racism.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with historian Richard Weikart. Inspired by arguments from both Charles Darwin and early Darwinist, the Nazis viewed the Nordic race as superior to other races and set about advancing human evolution by ridding the world of what they deemed inferior races and individuals. As historian Richard Weikart shows in his book Darwinian Racism, similar ideas circulate today among white nationalists and neo-Nazis who routinely use Darwinian theory in their propaganda to advance a racist agenda. The book Darwinian Racism is not only careful history, it's also a wake-up call. To receive your copy of Darwinian Racism, How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism by Dr. Richard Weikart, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Breaking the code of the Book of Revelation has become an international obsession. The result has been rampant misreading of Scripture, bad theology, and even bad politics and foreign policy. In the Apocalypse Code, find out what the Bible really says about the end times and why it matters today. Hank Hanegraaff argues that the key to understanding the last book of the Bible is the other 65 books of the Bible, not current events or recent history. The Apocalypse Code offers sane answers to some very controversial questions, such as, what does it mean to take the book of Revelation literally? Who are the Antichrist and the Great Whore of Babylon? And what is the real meaning of 666? Order The Apocalypse Code by Hank Hanegraaff today. Available in softcover, MP3 CD, or MP3 download from equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, historian Richard Weikart, as they continue their conversation.
So racism is inherent in Darwin's theory. We're embracing Darwinism in our academic institutions today. And yet, so many people that tout Darwinian evolution are dead set against racism. They're preaching against racism while maybe having some cognitive dissonance, not recognizing that they're buttressing the very edifice that produces racist ideology.
Yeah, you know, doing intellectual history is kind of tricky because you're right. People sort of mix and match ideas sometimes, and they don't always fit together. So in this case, the reason why racism was so fundamental for Darwin's theory about human evolution is because Darwin wanted to show that there was as much variation as possible within the human species. And in fact, if you look at his book, Origin of Species, where he doesn't talk about humans to any extent except the last couple pages he mentions them, the first chapter is on variation under domestication, and the second chapter is on variation in nature. So he has to try to show there's as much variation as possible for evolution to get off the ground. So in the human species, when he turns to humans, he uses racism, which was pre-existing. I mean, Darwin did not invent racism. It was a prejudice that he had already growing up and such. But he was going to integrate it into his theory by claiming that this shows that humans have variation, and it served his purposes to try to show that humans have the widest amount of variation possible. So they considered not just Darwin, but many Darwinists after him, and I do examine some of these in my book, such as Ernst Haeckel, the most famous German Darwinist of the late 19th century, were making claims. Haeckel, for example, was claiming that the lowest humans, which he thought were the Australian Aborigines, he thought were closer to apes in their mental abilities than they were to the Europeans. And this was standard fare. This was not an unusual position for Darwinists to take in that period. So they're trying to show that there's this gradation, you know, from the lowest humans, which are close to apes, to the highest humans, which are further away. And so it serves the purpose of their theory to show as wide a variation as possible. Now, in the 20th century, as people began to move away from racism, especially in the intellectual elites in the middle part of the 20th century, they began claiming that, you know, that genetics and such show that there's not as wide a variation between the races. And of course, they started recognizing empirically that a lot of people of other races are highly intelligent and they're not inferior intellectually. And so that sort of creates some cognitive dissonance. So they had to sort of set aside this idea of racism. And thankfully, they've set aside the idea, at least most intellectually, to set it aside. However, as I show in my book, there are some people on the white nationalist side who are continuing to promote the idea that Darwinism promotes racism.
Yeah, I want to talk about that a little later on in the podcast, but fair to say that Darwin considered racial inequality as evidence for his theory.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that after... Okay, so Darwin sees racism as evidence for his theory, and what's interesting is that after Darwin, once Darwinism became established as a sort of scientific consensus by roughly the turn of the century or so, many of Darwinists at that point and in the early 20th century were arguing that Darwinism proves racism. So Darwin thought that racism proved human evolution, and later evolutionists were going to say Darwinism proves racism because there has to be variation in the species for evolution to happen.
Darwin also saw genocide. I mean, we're hearing a lot about genocide today with the war in Ukraine, but Darwin saw genocide as a progressive force in human evolution.
Exactly. In fact, in The Descent of Man, here's a quotation from The Descent of Man where he's talking about this very issue, and he said, quote, "At some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace throughout the world the savage races." And so he thought that was how evolutionary progress was going to happen, by these so-called lower races being exterminated. The higher races survive, and that brings about evolutionary progress.
I wonder, in this woke environment we live in today, why statues of Darwin aren't being pulled down, because he not only believed that there were differences in cranial capacities between various human beings, but he also believed in the intellectual inferiority of women. That
exactly.
Women were intellectually inferior in whatever they might take up. And I read this myself in The Descent of Man.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting point you raised there, because Darwin, together with other anthropologists of his day, thought that cranial capacities were a way to measure the intellectual abilities. We now know that's not true, but Darwin thought it was, and women do have, on the average, smaller cranial capacities because their bodies are smaller and such. So, but Darwin, you're right, did use that as evidence to claim that women are intellectually inferior as well. As to why the statues aren't toppled, I think that there are just too many people worshiping Darwin.
You've already sort of touched on this, but I want to expand on this if you would, and that is the subtitle for Origin. Can that rightly be applied to humans? There are a lot of woke, educational, polymaths, people that we're familiar with, names that roll off our tongue, who are saying today that the subtitle, The Preservation of Favored Races in the Struggle for Existence, does not apply to human beings.
Well, in The Origin of Species, Darwin barely mentions humans. Only in the last couple of pages does he say anything about humans. But in that last couple of pages, he does make clear that he does think his evolutionary theory applies. And if you read Darwin's notebooks, he was already theorizing about human evolution quite extensively before writing The Origin of Species. And then if you turn to The Descent of Man, written 12 years later in 1871, he makes very clear that the things that he laid out in The Origin of Species do apply to humans. So the question is sort of tricky, because was he talking about favored races in Origin of Species? Does that mean human races in Origin of Species? Well, mostly he's talking more about like what we think of subspecies of like pigeons and other kinds of things. But you turn to The Descent of Man, and he clearly is talking about races, and he actually does say that races are subspecies. He doesn't think they're separate species. He claims that there is one human species. Darwin does argue for the unity of the human species. But he argues that there's different subspecies, which he thinks are these races. Now, interestingly, some Darwinists after him, like Ernst Haeckel, were going to argue that different human races are actually completely separate species. And some, there were even a few, not very many, but there actually were a few Darwinists, anthropologists in the late 19th century, who argued that different human races, and here they were thinking particularly about the white Caucasians as one branch, the East Asians as another major branch, and the Black Africans as another major branch. They thought that those three branches had actually evolved from different ape species. And so they saw that much separation and division and variation within the human species.
You brought up Haeckel a couple of times. You know, he is someone who has really impacted so many of us in different ways. We've all seen his drawings, and I'm surprised that those drawings are still extant. Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny,
right.
That the emerging embryo goes through all of the evolutionary phases, so at one time it's a fish, and later on it becomes a frog, and
right.
Eventually it becomes a fetus. And by the way, that was actually used as an argument for being able to abort early on, because when you're aborting early on, you're aborting a creature as opposed to a child.
Right. Yeah, Haeckel's drawings still, or at least if not the drawings themselves, at least the ideas you're suggesting, is sort of taught as standard fare in many places. And you're right, it was used to justify these kind of positions, that human fetus is closer to animal than it is to a human, sort of buying into the evolutionary deception. And by the way, interestingly, there were anthropologists and psychiatrists and such in the late 19th, early 20th century, they were arguing, too, that people with mental illnesses were closer to apes than they were to humans because they hadn't intellectually developed enough to be like humans.
You write a lot about Adolf Hitler, what the Nazis did. Adolf Hitler famously said that only humans, and especially the church, have made it their goal to artificially preserve the weak, the unfit for life, and the inferior. And though he made statements like that, there are a lot of people that are arguing that Hitler was actually a Christian, because you can find him advocating for Christianity on the other side. So he was certainly a chameleon.
Definitely. In fact, I think I actually use that word, chameleon, in my book, Hitler's Religion, where I talk about Hitler's religious beliefs. In my book, Hitler's Religion, I argue that Hitler was a pantheist, that is, he believed that nature was God. He was very slippery, though, you're right. He was a consummate politician. It's interesting, if you look at the statements that he made very positively about Christianity, almost all of those were in the early phases of his political career, most of them before he became Chancellor of Germany and dictator, and a couple of them maybe just right after, when he's still trying to woo the German public over to his side.
Thank you for listening to this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, historian Richard Weikart. To hear this Hank Unplugged podcast interview in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of Darwinian Racism: How Darwinism Influenced Hitler, Nazism, and White Nationalism, by Dr. Richard Weikart. Just call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. Once again, that's 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.